The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I've been meditating for more than a year. Okay. So some of you are relatively new, I guess, and some of you are old practitioners. And just want to check in. How was that meditation for you? If anyone feels like they could share.
Well, thank you. I think I'm here with a group, and they actually asked before we came, is somebody going to talk us through? Let me use this.
So I came with a group, and they asked before we came if somebody was going to talk us through the meditation, and I think, and I said, I don't know. Sometimes the teacher does and sometimes they don't. But I think the being talked through the relaxation process is actually really helpful. Mm-hmm. And even I've been practicing meditation for a while, and even now it still helps me to, for someone just to invite the different parts of my body and my mind to relax.
Mm-hmm. Good. Anyone new want to ask, describe your experience?
I'm going to second that. It really felt good to be kind of guided, scanning the body. That always really works well mm-hmm. for me. And just noticing and being present. You know, when you brought that in, that was really helpful too.
Mm-hmm.
I also feel like the sensations you were talking about, I could really go there and just really feel that and kind of release it too. So that was excellent. Thank you.
Good. Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'll take an easy one. I couldn't hear well, so it made my mind more frustrated.
Oh, sorry.
But yeah, it's how it is.
All right. So, well, it's nice to have you all here. Yeah. Did you enjoy the meditation? Did you find it enjoyable somewhat? Yeah. 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 Good. Well, you may wonder why we do this practice. And the Buddha said, I teach the truth of suffering and the end of suffering. So our practice is very practical. It's Buddhism isn't a theological religion. It's not, we don't believe in some outside force. I mean, we might believe in that, but that's fine. That's wonderful for those who believe in God and get comfort from, or Allah, or, you know, whatever, some theological presence. But this practice doesn't interfere with that at all. But it's like the Buddha said, come and see. Come and see. Sit down and take a look. And then he said, the doors to the deathless, this may sound strange, but the doors to the deathless are open. Come and see. So what does he mean by the deathless? Maybe he means the awareness that doesn't come and go. Other words to describe awareness are the unoriginated, the unconditional, So just something that is steady here. Maybe when you were born, you had this awareness. When you were a baby, when you were a child, when you were a teenager, certainly, we always had this awareness. 10 years ago, you had this awareness. 20 years ago, you had this awareness. And, you know, when you die, as you die, you'll have this awareness. We don't know what happens after you die. But that's what is meant by come and see. Come and see with this awareness. And with this awareness, hopefully we can use this awareness to disentangle what we do to make us, to make ourselves suffer. So that's really my understanding of what Buddhism is all about. Seeing our suffering, seeing our stress, seeing our pain, our sadness, our fear, our anger, our lust, our depression, compulsions, seeing all these ways that we make ourselves suffer. So that's the first step. So we're sitting here comfortably, relaxed, present with our body, present with our breath, right now. There's no suffering for me. Maybe there isn't for you either, because we're pretty present right now. We're just here right now, and things are okay. I mean, somebody could shoot me with an arrow and I would feel pain in my, you know, but that's not really happening right now. Right now, I don't have those pulls, those conditions that take me into that world of suffering. So that's why we ground ourselves, we anchor ourselves, we call it an anchor, in the breath and the body. Because the breath is always here. There's no problem with the breath. The body is always here. The body is always present. It's the mind that goes into the fantasies about what could be or what was and makes us nervous, or it makes us regretful or ashamed or wanting or dreading. That's what happens with the mind. So we want to relax the mind. Well, first of all, we want to see. We want to see what we do. See what we do to ourselves. That's the first step. Well, the first step is to relax, come into our body, come into our breath, and establish the ground. But that won't last for long. The thoughts will start to come. The suffering will start to come. And this is what we have to, this is our practice, how to deal with this kind of stuff. How to get smart about it. So we might see a thought come in about the future. And we might be afraid of that, and we see that. We see the thought because we're sitting comfortably and we can see come and see. And we can see how that connects with our heart, our feelings, and how it makes the heart contract. I have dread about this thing, this thought, and my heart, I experience a contraction in my body, and that's the suffering, the thought and the feeling. That is the suffering. Is this making sense to you all? Does it make... Is that okay? Some of you are experienced practitioners, and maybe this is just, you know, not that interesting to you, I hope. Okay, yeah. So, there are many Buddhisms all over the world, many Buddhisms in America, many different kinds of Buddhisms, Tibetan Buddhism, Soto Zen Buddhism, Rinzai Zen, these are Japanese Buddhisms, Rinzai Zen, there's a couple of examples. There must be five or six or maybe more Buddhisms in Japan. There's the Thai Force tradition and the Burmese tradition and, you know, Vipassana and Zen and, yeah, there are lots and lots of different kinds of Buddhisms. And Buddhism has been existing for 2,560 years, so long time. Many Buddhisms back when Buddha was existing. But what I'm getting to by this is there's so many different practices, traditions, cultures, but there's one thread, one strong thread that all Buddhisms all through history of change have shared, and that's called the Four Noble Truths. Have you guys studied this kind of the Four Noble Truths to some extent? Yeah, so the Four Noble Truths, the first noble truth is, this is the crux of Buddha's teaching, the first noble truth is, there is suffering. So if you notice yourself suffering, if you can actually see it, we often don't see it. We just go, get on the computer, and watch TV, you know, distract yourself, get something to eat, and we don't see it. So this is a wisdom practice. We want to see it. And in our meditation, we see our suffering and we can pat ourselves on the back. Wow, we have achieved the first noble truth. This is big. This is really important. It might seem like, I'm suffering. What's so great about this? Well, what's great about it is that you actually saw it. That you didn't run away from it. You didn't distract yourself. You actually sat down. Usually we're going forward. We're trying to fix this or do that or accomplish this or, you know, we're creating, you know, something's wrong, fix it. Somebody said something mean to me, get revenge, or talk to them, get them to like me, or tell my friend about it. What a terrible thing that was that just that person said to me, and isn't that person terrible, and stuff like that. But so we're going forward, rolling forward. Well, this is revolutionary. It's not the way we exist. It's actually sitting down, taking a backward step. Instead of going forward, we go backward. We just sit down and we look at it. We look at what's going on. And we relax. Big deal is we relax. And so instead of constructing solutions, constructing what happened, constructing what we're going to do about it, constructing a fear, constructing an anger, constructing a desire, we just relax and into awareness. And through this relaxation, we let that kind of stuff unravel. Just unravel. We allow it. It's like, you could say that this practice is a destruction practice. We allow it to deconstruct. Does that make sense? So you see it, you feel it, and you just relax and allow it to deconstruct. So we see how we do it. Somebody said something nasty to me. Okay, that's a... It hurts. That hurts. But what hurts the most is what we do with that in our minds. How we replay that event over and over again. I'm just using that example. I'm sure you all have your own delicious brands of suffering. But this is one idea. So so we play that over and over. She said that. What did she think? Why did she think that about me? What am I going to do about it? You know, and the story goes can spin on and on about that one event. And that's the second noble truth, is all of these replayings and strategies and all this stuff that we do that keeps it there, keeps the suffering here. Those are like the second, third, and fourth, and fifth arrows. It's like we keep shooting ourselves with arrows. And those are what really hurt. Not the first arrow. The first arrow, you know, kind of goes away if we don't pay much attention to it. But the replaying of the scenario is what really hurts. And that's the second noble truth, which is suffering is created because we hold on to it. Poor me. I'm such a victim. That person is so mean, and that person is so... I'm going to get even, whatever. We replay this scenario over... So that's holding on to it. Holding on to this poor me, this victim, this anger, whatever. Holding on. And that is what we think of as the reason that we suffer, is that holding on process. So we notice that. Hooray! We have wisdom. We're noticing. We're wise. We can see not only the pain, but we can see how we're holding on to that pain. Now you might say, or think, but this really is pain. This is really bad. You know, you don't understand. My name is David. You don't understand, David. This is really pain. This is, you know, a terrible situation in my life. my son is... got some horrible disease, and he's in terrible distress, and my husband's bipolar. You know, the things can exist. You know, terrible things can exist in our lives. So, yes, that's true. But, and I'm also gonna contend that most of our suffering, the great, great, great extent of our suffering, is not that. It's replays of of old scenarios that are just these dreams that we keep replaying and replaying and replaying. But we can even still work on this, and so then the third noble truth is, which you would probably gather, is there is a path out of this suffering, and that path is to let go of the holding on. To come back, like we did in the meditation, to come back to the body, and to come back to the breath. And, you know, I will say that even in these worst, most horrible circumstances, that still can be done. One can still come back to the body and the breath and find some peace and well-being just in being here. And then go into our difficult situations in a much more centered and compassionate and strong and wholesome way. So this is just kind of a Buddhist primer I'm giving you here. And I hope it makes sense to you. But what I really was going to talk about today wasn't that at all, although it's related. What I was really going to talk to you about was how how positive experiences can help us so much. Like the positive experience that, you know, of remembering someone who loves you. How good that feels. The positive experience of being with someone who loves you. Taking it in. The positive experience of being with someone who likes you. Just likes you. It's okay. Here I am. I'm liked. I'm, you know, it's pretty good. Life's pretty good. When I drive through my hometown, which is Burlingame, I try to drive through the back roads and notice the beautiful trees. Burlingame is called the City of Trees, and they make arbors in the neighborhoods over the street, and I just take it in, the beauty of the trees as I'm driving. And so our practice is to let go, right? To let go of these sticking negativities. But, and I'm also contending that what can be extremely helpful is not focusing exclusively on letting go of negativities, but focusing on positivity and taking it in. There have been studies of the brain that show that the what's it starts with an A, the part of the brain, amygdala. Amygdala is very large in us, and the amygdala is the part of the brain that is like, you know, we're, you know, back how many millions of years ago, and there's a giant rat. It's going to attack us, so the amygdala, you know, fires up, and we're afraid, and we run away. So, or we climb a tree, or do something that where the rat can't get us. That we're genetically wired to have these big amygdalas that are very attuned to distress, very attuned to threats. So we're very wired to negativity. It wouldn't do that woman, you know, who was trying to get along in a jungle-like setting. It wouldn't do her much good to sit down and meditate and feel good about herself and feel good about life and, you know, something transcendent, because she might get eaten if she lost her vigilance. So that we're wired to be vigilant. Like if you see a squirrel, the eyes of a squirrel are like, you know, just like looking around. Well, you know, we have those same eyes, looking around for threats. And it has been proposed by this one scientist that I've been reading, that we don't take in the good so much. He says that we are Velcro for negative experiences and Teflon for positive experiences. That all day long we have pretty nice experiences. Like this is a nice experience. This is, you know, nobody's hurting us, and it's kind of pleasant here. This is a pleasant experience. And you'll leave here and assumedly you'll have many neutral to pleasant experiences and some wonderful experiences as the day goes by. Someone might smile at you on the street, say hello. Or you could smile at someone on the street and say hello. You could smile at the checkout person at the grocery store, say, how are you today? Or you could have a nice talk with a friend. But then one negative thing happens. And that's what, wow, you know, we take that in. And that's what dominates our thinking. That's what we go to bed with. We go to bed with that negative experience instead of the hundreds of nice experiences that happen to us all day long. And so some positive experiences. I've named a lot of negative ones. Anger, sadness, depression, greed, blah, blah, blah. Positive, gratitude, gladness, appreciation, love, like, generosity, a cup of coffee in the morning, just enjoying the day, enjoying being alive, enjoying the fact that we're safe, we're really safe, peacefulness is a feeling, it's a feeling just as much as fear. Contentment is a feeling. I'm content, it's a feeling. Satisfaction is a feeling. Fear and anger and, you know, wanting aren't the only feelings that exist. There are many, many, many more beautiful feelings than negative feelings. So the brain, like I said before, it's like tofu. It's a very malleable substance. And the brain is firing all day long, firing trillions and trillions and trillions of firings. And the brain learns. How does the brain learn? The brain learns from what it's fed. There's an old story that of a grandmother was talking to her granddaughter, and she told her granddaughter, "Honey, I have two wolves that live inside of me. I have a wolf of greed and fear and anger, and I have another wolf of love and peace and kindness." And the granddaughter says, "Well, Grandma, who wins?" She says, "The wolf that I feed." So, if we can turn our attention, like in the meditation today, to really take in the beautiful, when you walk down the street, know that you're walking down, be aware of it. I'm walking down the street, and it's a nice day. We often say it's a nice day. It's a nice day today. Then we just kind of go about our business. But really, take in the nice day. And let the nice day feed us. Let the nice day get into our cells, into our cellular system. Let the nice conversation with a friend notice, not just I had a nice conversation, get up and go on, but notice, this is a nice conversation, this feels good. Take it in. I mean, this is a practice. This isn't just something I'm thinking about passing, but actually bringing awareness to the positive, taking it in and letting it change you. There's a practice called the three blessings. And this practice has been studied, but it's been very researched, with thousands of people participating, and it's shown that the people that do these practices over a control group sleep better, sleep a half hour longer a night, and feel much better when they wake up in the morning. Sounds like a good practice, right? Can really improve the quality of our lives. The practice is simply, before you go to bed, think of three blessings from that day. Or write down, even better, write down three blessings from that day. Write down, I had this coffee with a loving friend who saw me, who understood me. And not only think about it, reflect on it, reflect on the feeling of that empathy from a friend, and take it in. Take it in for like 18 seconds, minimum 18 seconds. A minute might be better. Write it down, even better. I'm a chaplain at a hospital, volunteer chaplain, and after I leave here, I'm going to go to the hospital today. And I know I'm going to have many wonderful experiences of my own compassion. And, I might go to 14 rooms, 15 rooms, and I might have extraordinarily beautiful experience in three rooms, where I can really reach someone. Tonight I can bring that back into my, how I felt that compassion and that kindness, and it can change the brain. It can change the cells. It's what I'm feeding myself. So this doesn't have to be even instances of blessings that happened that day. And you know, this doesn't have to be, this isn't necessarily just when you go to bed, but this can be this kind of slant of awakening our happiness part. It can happen all day long. It can be, you know, kind of a reorientation of, and it's really apparent in meditation. I mean, when we're not worrying and not consumed with compulsive thinking, the mind at rest is a beautiful thing. It feels good. The mind at rest is peaceful. Peace feels good. Ease feels good. Relaxation feels good. Relaxation of the body, relaxation of the mind. Our default presence feels good. So that's why meditation is so wholesome and so nourishing to us, because we sit back and we relax. And at least for some time, we touch into the mind at rest. And we feel how that feels. Just pure presence, just being, the grandeur, the exalted nature of just being. Some people think, including myself, that this state, this exalted state of what we call mindfulness, is the most beautiful experience, the most heightened experience available to human beings. This expansive, wide, peaceful ease that we can feel in meditation, that simply is the presence of our being. And it's always here, always available to us. Some people can have some experience like that in prayer. So prayer tends to clear the mind of the small stuff. So we think of this experience of mindfulness as transcendent. It's a transcendent. It's not involved in the mundane experiences of our mind. So by meditating, we're deeply affirming the positive. And people that meditate a lot get more benefit. People who meditate a little get benefit. Meditation is extremely, extremely beneficial. It's going right to the heart of the matter. So, this exalted experience of mindfulness has been called the most precious experience available to man. It's been called a jewel. It's called many, many beautiful things it's been called. But the experience of it is very simple. It's just a really simple experience of just being here in peace. Being here in perhaps some fundamental happiness. The third noble truth, when there is no suffering. Getting some taste of a state of mind in which there is no suffering. No suffering is here, now. Present is here, now. When I was very ill recently. I had an operation, and after I got out of the operation, I felt worse than I've ever felt in my life. I had pain, and I had nausea. What was worse than the pain was nausea, And I didn't want to practice. I didn't, which I'm embarrassed about, but I just didn't feel like even practicing. I felt so horrible. And excuse me for the expression, but I could not pass gas. I couldn't pass gas for it went on for 4 days, 5 days. And they put gas in me during the operation. So this gas buildup was in my system, and I couldn't go to the bathroom, and I didn't want to eat, and I was just like, wake up in the morning, and oh no, another day of this. And I kept taking the stuff that was supposed to make me go to the bathroom, but it didn't work, and I tried all these things. And it's just like my system just says, come on in. we're home for you here. Just, come on in. They just welcomed all these medicines and everything. So on the fifth day, the evening of the fifth day, I somehow reached this doctor. And this doctor said, take this, which I did. And it was this stuff I took. And then, lo and behold, the dams broke. I was very, I can't say that I was ecstatic at that time, but I was, but it was like, my digestive system actually will work, because I was thinking maybe something's wrong with me, maybe it'll never work again, but it will work, and there's a path here to that I might be happy again. There's a path here. I might be healthy again. So as that realization started to come over me, and as the pain and the discomfort began to leave me, something started to happen to me where I started feeling great. Something came over me like, it wasn't even, it wasn't mental, it wasn't, it was like this thing started, it was involuntary, started coming over me, this feeling of relief. Potential for great relief started taking me over. And I got up the next morning, and waking up in despair of facing this day, I woke up with there was some glimmer of hope. Wow, this may be a better day. And then I went downstairs, the catheter, and I sat in the chair that I always sit in, but I asked my wife to make me some soft-boiled eggs. And she brought me these soft-boiled eggs with salt and pepper on them. And I looked and I thought, wow, that looks so good. And I ate them, and it could have been like some 3 Michelin starred French appetizer. You know, it was just the most delicious thing I'd ever tasted. And this feeling of relief became more powerful. And I became happy. And I became actually joyous, kind of joyous. There was some silent, kind of quiet joy that was coming over me. Then I read in this sutra. I was reading this sutra that morning. And I read... Or suppose a person were afflicted, suffering, and gravely ill, food would not be agreeable, and one's body had no strength. That was me, right? But later one would recover from the affliction, and one's food would agree with him, and one's body would regain strength. Then on considering this, one would be glad and full of joy. So that's exactly what happened to me. But this is a simile. This is a simile about how we feel when we give up ill will. You know, ill will is illness, right? So the joy that I felt, the relief that I felt, they're saying this is how you feel when you give up ill will. There's another simile for giving up greed. It's like a guy getting out of a prison or something like that. So there are various similes for freedom from our sufferings. So and then it's encouraged in this same. Similarly, well, I'll just tell you, it's encouraged to feel the benefit, feel the relief, feel the joy, feel the rapture, feel the goodness of positive emotions. It's encouraged not just to... I want to read it. It's just so beautiful about how you can get absorbed into these feelings. It says, having abandoned ill will in this case, one makes the rapture and pleasure drench, steep, fill, and pervade the body, so that there's not one part of one's whole body unpervaded by the rapture and pleasure. Born of seclusion, born of meditation, born of feeling this relief. So like I invited you today to feel, to really let yourself be absorbed, to steep yourself in the love of someone who cares about you. It's healthy. It's good for you. They ask you to do this. This is like over 2,000 years ago. Steep yourself, you know, don't just let this stuff pass you by. It's so nourishing to reflect on it and feel it when you can. Feel the happiness, feel the pleasure, feel the rapture, feel the joy, feel the peace, feel the tranquility. Let the good in. It's healing. This practice is the medicine that cures all ills. Well, thank you very much for listening to my spiel. Does anyone have any questions or comments about any of this or reflections?
I'm glad you spoke about I'm just having a hard time firing up my happiness. And I've been practicing meditation for about 8 years, really devoted to it. And but I just have had a hard time. It just seems like I care less and less about more and more. And I just have lost a lot of interest in baking for other people. Whatever promise this holds, I'm just having a hard time finding it. And so I'm glad that you spoke about the practice of hanging on to whatever small thing feels good in a day and believing in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know about the negativity bias. I've been reading Rick Hansen. I know about this, but I just have a hard time.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, you know, I would just suggest, you know about this. And so when you see it, when it comes your way, maybe make a big deal out of it. Yeah, make a big deal out of it. Mm-hmm. You know, really let it in. Reflect on it.
Your soft-boiled eggs.
Yeah, because, you know, just walking down the street, wow, it's okay. This life's okay. You know, we really have it good, us human beings. We have it better than kings and queens ever had it. You turn on the water, there's hot water. You got a toilet that flushes. Turn on, flip a switch and there's light. You know, we just have, we have so much. It's as good as it has ever been. Little things for human beings. We take it all for granted. I do. Take it all for granted, but there's so much to appreciate if we, you know, that. Look for it. And then, not just pass it by, but steep in it. Really make a practice of steeping in it. And it can heal you. It can heal the suffering. Does that make sense? Okay.
Oh, yeah. I just wanted to say I've been going through a lot of suffering over the last year. I moved 5 times. Ooh. I was involved in a tax situation that wasn't my doing, but I had to get divorced because of it. All this in 1 year. Had to hire attorneys, and it's just been plaguing on, and I just finally, you know, it's like, when is enough enough? What do I do with all this? And it came to me that go meditate. That's what I do with all that. And that the real, it can be very grounding and look at the suffering differently, that, you know, it isn't forever, and it's not, right, it's never forever, and there's just great wisdom in what I'm going through, and that I can learn more compassion and be forgiving of both myself and of others. I get what you said about the poor me, look what's happened to me, you know, I've gone through that. But it is, you know, it's difficult, and a lot of my suffering has come from that place, you know, the wolves and all that. It's just like, it comes over, I'm trying to learn to let it wash over, and I started doing yoga again in combination with meditation.
Great.
And I was fortunate enough to be in a class where Gil's wife was teaching a meditation in a class that I was in, and I told her about IMC, and she goes, "That's my husband." I went, whoa, this is all kind of connected, right? And so I really enjoy the class, very open, and I'm learning to just be more and more open, and she did some walking meditation with us. But, yeah, so the current situation is I have been staying with someone for 1 week, paid the rent, I get a 30-day notice after 1 week. What's going on, right? And I talked to the woman. I said, normally I would just, you know, walk away from this and say, okay, fine, whatever, be angry. I said, you know what, I really want to listen to you. I really want to hear what it is that is uncomfortable for you. You know, can we go sit down? In the past, I would have, I'm just going to ignore her for 30 days. I'm not talking to her, you know. And so she sat down, and as we started talking, I said, just, I want you to feel free at any given moment to tell me what's bothering you. I need to know. When people tell me something, I really take it in, I take it to heart, and I change whatever thing that's might be bothering that person. But then I'm also getting better about, you know, telling them how I feel. So last night I went to the board back there and all the people that are looking for housing and or someone just lost something and the crisis, the housing crisis is just despicable. It's just the greed. And we're all in some way afflicted by, well, maybe not everyone, but in some way, pretty much all of us are being afflicted by that. And the greed that goes along with that. That makes me angry. You know, it's hard to forgive those kinds of the way we're being treated as human beings. But anyway, so that's kind of, I'm going on and rambling. I hope I'm not rambling too long. But yeah, I just need another situation, I guess. Use this as a valuable tool to learn. And just keep talking to her every day. And there could be a miracle. She could change her mind, you know, because I'm listening to her. You know, but time will tell. And I'll just keep open. You know, it's over and over. Stay open. You know, learn. You know, come in.
Yeah.
What you were saying, just...
Well, you know, you're doing yourself a great favor by going to yoga. You're doing yourself a great favor by coming here, by all these positive things that you're doing for yourself will help you, you know, through this tough time. And it sounds like just an incredibly tough time. And the tough time will pass. But you're also building resources that are not just good for now,
right,
but that will hold you in good stead when times are easier, and they will be easier. You know, I urge you to practice self-compassion. You know, like we had this meditation on being loved. Do it. Love yourself. You know, and you experience that. Take that in, your love and compassion for yourself. Make that an object in your meditation, at least for some time. I think that'll easier.
It's starting to get easier, but yeah, it's easier for me to be compassionate of others. You know,
And I hear that's pretty typical, but, you know, I am learning. I am learning because I'm showing up.
Yeah.
Doing the yoga. Everything's clearing the mind.
Good.
So.
Yeah, so that experience that you have, that you can more easily experience, of compassion for others,
right.
Turn that same compassion toward yourself.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.